This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll visit with LSU President King Alexander. He'll talk about the budget as the regular legislative session starts today with the budget still in question. Also, the Greek system at LSU has been under fire since the death of Maxwell Groover. We'll talk about that with King Alexander. And the president has a report on LSU's impact on the Louisiana economy, which is significant. And Jeffrey Mark, a biographer whose latest target is Ella Fitzgerald, the First Lady of Jazz. She died in 1996, but Ella Fitzgerald remains relevant and popular to this day. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. And if you're dialing locally, 297-5633. You can always send us an email. We like those, too, at talk@talklouisiana.org. Ali Baltazar is producing, and in a few minutes we'll be joined by King Alexander, the president of LSU, who is en route to the studio, and I'm told he's very close. So we look forward to visiting with the president of LSU, who I understand is very, very close, and we'll hear from him about the goings-on at the Old War School. Today, by the way, is the 85th birthday of Gus Wilde, the legendary political consultant who was a power to be reckoned with in the world of public relations and politics, and a fabulous author and playwright as well. Celebrating his 85th birthday today is Gus Wilde, and we wish him the very best. I know he's had some health issues, but quite a man and a true Louisiana legend. For many years, that's the show he hosted on LPB, and he was a Louisiana legend, appropriately so. So happy birthday to Gus Wilde. King Alexander is sauntering into the studio, the president of Louisiana State University, and he, come July 1st, will be celebrating 5 years as the man in charge at the Old War School. And King Alexander, it is certainly an endeavor that has its challenges, and you've gotten an indoctrination by fire. How have the 5 years been?
Well, it's been a very good 5 years. It's just trying to, now we're to a point where we're trying to stabilize our budget at the State House, and going into session today, it's appropriate to be here and just to make sure that we have a stable budget to go forward, because our applications have never been higher, and that's from California to New York to Louisiana. And we want to make sure that our budget is stable so we could actually do what we're supposed to do, which is graduate students and build our economy.
Well, you have a success story to report in that the university has grown, although if you read U.S. News and World Report, LSU's fallen a little behind since its heyday. But nonetheless, you've done well enough that the campus is still rolling. It's a beautiful place to be. There are great teachers who have stayed. But how have the budget cuts affected Louisiana State University, the cuts over the last 10 years, even those preceding your arrival on campus?
I'd say the decade has taken its toll on us, and our enrollment has ebbed and flowed throughout the years. But I'll say that once we got a stable budget, which was this past year, we got TOPS funded, we had our universities not cut. It's amazing to see how how resilient the LSU name is around the country, because of we brought in our largest cohort of new faculty, 134 new faculty from Harvard, Yale, Berkeley, UCLA, Oxford, the Sorbonne. We actually have our best cohort of new faculty that we've ever had, and it's not because we had a budget increase. We had a stable budget that wasn't cut. And now our enrollment is looking better than we've ever seen. 100% growth in California and Florida, 34% in Louisiana. We've never seen numbers like this. So we're very strong as an institution, and our national reputation still is very, very strong, and we just need to make sure that we have a stable budget as we go forward.
I remember President Alexander was making the round shortly after you took the job, and you were stating that this is a nationwide trend as far as slashing budgets in higher education at public universities. But that said, Louisiana's had more than its fair share. I understand we, as a state, have been hit harder than any other state. Is that correct?
That is correct. In the last 10 years, no state has been, their budgets have been slashed as much as we have. We've gone from being about 75% funded from the state to about 20% funded from the state. So even though this is a national trend, it has taken many other states a couple decades to get here. We did it much more rapidly in about an 8-year span. So the governor's trying to get us back on track. We wish our House and our Senate just stand behind the governor and making sure that we don't devastate public higher education and the opportunities for our kids.
Now, those numbers, sometimes they go in one ear and out the other, but you were saying 10 years ago, LSU's funding was 75% from the state. Today, it's 20%.
It's 20%, and that's pretty much that's all of our institutions, including our medical schools, which are even about 15% down in New Orleans. So those trends, that 10-year span has really taken its toll on where we were versus where we could be.
How have you survived?
We've survived because LSU has a great brand. It's a great name. I tell people there are only two public universities in the country known by their initials. It's UCLA and LSU. And everybody knows who we are. We've got a great backbone network and infrastructure that goes well beyond the boundaries of the United States. Our alumni are in Saudi Arabia. They're in Japan. They're everywhere. And so even though these last 10 years have been devastating in terms of public support, we need to turn public support around and realize the social benefits of what an LSU can do for this entire state and this region.
Your number is 877-217-5757. Governor John Bel Edwards will open the legislature today. He did this 3 weeks ago for a special session on the budget that went nowhere, and now the governor is opening a regular session that likely will be condensed from 3 months to 2 months so that there will be another special session on the budget to follow. All this uncertainty, what does it do to you?
Well, the uncertainty, and I have great concerns for our parents and our students because now that TOPS is in flux, they don't know what's going to happen. Most decisions get made about college attendance, particularly for the students that you want, the best and the brightest you want to keep in your state. Most of those decisions get made at the end of April and the 1st of May. They don't get made in June when our legislature decides to solve a budget problem or not. That's why we wanted the special session to solve these issues. And unfortunately, our parents and students are still out there wondering, and I just want to reassure them that I have no doubt that both the Republicans and Democrats in the legislature want to solve both the problem of higher ed funding as well as TOPS. It's just unfortunate the timetable doesn't fit with parental and student decisions about going to college.
877-217-5757. If you'd like to chime in with the president of Louisiana State University, Fieldon King Alexander, pride of Kentucky, who came to the Old War School July 1st, 2013. Hard to believe, but it has been almost 5 years. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, he says that we've cut funding down to 20%, but does that include all the money LSU gets from TOPS indirectly? I mean, because let's face it, they didn't have TOPS, 15, 20 years ago? So, yeah, while we're funding universities less money directly, we're probably increasing your budget indirectly via TOPS. Is that correct to say?
So that's a very good question. With TOPS included, we're about 30, a little more than 30%. So there has been a significant decrease in the public support. With TOPS, we go from roughly about 20% to a little over 30% in our funding. But TOPS, remember, TOPS is also, it's not a supplanting issue. We're competing with national institutions, and of 50 flagship universities in the United States, you can put everything in a barrel and realize that we're nowhere near what's being spent on students in Alabama, what's being spent on students in Kentucky, which is about half of what we're able to spend. So I think our students are worth what our peers are spending for the education they receive. We have great faculty and staff doing the best they can, but I will put up our efficiency numbers against anybody.
How significant is TOPS?
TOPS is very significant to families and parents who've been relying on it because it's been such a staple in higher education throughout Louisiana for now nearly 2.5 decades, that a lot of parents probably didn't save as much as they would have for college for their students, assuming TOPS was going to be there for them. So to see TOPS kicked around like this is problematic. But even more problematic is what happened in the last 10 years when our universities were cut so drastically just to fund TOPS. So for many years, we were taking university funds out of the classroom and putting it into TOPS. So indirectly, students were paying for their own TOPS.
Well, this is a program that a few years ago did get cut, and then it was restored, another case of uncertainty. What did that do to the student body? Was it a jolt when it suddenly was not whole?
It certainly is a jolt. It's certain. If you ask parents about the uncertainty of it all, there's that problem going into the next year. But for students on campus, we really don't fully understand what happened when we did cut TOPS. We anticipated about a 250 freshman student body increase last year. We came in about 600 below. So a lot of students they just left the state because of the scholarship, particularly the 30s and above on the ACT level on averages. They took the scholarships that Arkansas threw at them, Alabama threw at them, Mississippi threw at them, and they took a lot of that scholarship dollars and they said, look, I'm going for certainty, not uncertainty.
So if you score a 30 on the ACT, great score, quite often you have options in other states.
You've got lots of scholarship dollars being thrown at you in the mail every day.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, and locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org, and we're back with President Alexander after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF, 877-217-5757 for King Alexander, the president of LSU, who still plays basketball on a regular basis, and the Fighting Tigers will be facing the Raging Cajuns Wednesday night, first round, NIT. I'm sure you'll be at courtside.
I will be courtside. That'll be a big game for us.
It will.
I'm proud of our guys.
Should be quite a game.
And our women should be announced today where they'll be going in the NCAA tournament.
Pat in Mid-City. Hi, Pat. You're on the air with King Alexander.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning, Dr. Alexander. Hope both of you are doing well. Regarding your comments about the lack of funding, I think it's a problem that is really all over our country, unfortunately. A lot of people over the past 10 years especially have been preaching no taxes, no taxes. They don't seem to grasp the fact that we need these talented young people throughout America to fill the jobs of the future and the jobs of the present, for that matter. But when you see politicians getting on TV denigrating intellectuals, as an example, it's really a hard struggle to tell people that it's not about labeling. It's about advancing us as a country. So I wish you well in your fight to regain funding, not just for LSU, but for all of our state universities, including Southern University. They've been decimated as well.
She's exactly right. That is a wonderful statement and comment. This country has our 55 to 64-year-olds ranked number one in the world in percentage with college degrees, and now our 25 to 34-year-olds ranked 13th in the OECD world. So she's exactly right. This isn't an individual investment, as it's been mentioned over and over. It's a societal investment in the benefit of everybody, and we should care as much about our neighbor's kid going to college as we do our own.
877-217-5757 for King Alexander, and I can recall when I enrolled at LSU about 40 years ago, I was an out-of-state student. I was living on campus. I was on the meal plan. I had parking. I had the works, books. And my first semester, it was right over $1,000 for the whole shebang. Why has the cost of education gone up so much?
Well, the cost is directly attributable for 80% of the students in the country have to do with our public colleges, universities, and this disinvestment that we've seen and it ranges from Colorado to North Carolina. We've seen this disinvestment continue against higher education and against the next generation of students, forcing the burden and the cost on them. And this needs to stop. We really need to understand the societal benefit of educating all of these young adults who are going to go on to build the next economy. And other countries are doing the exact opposite that we are doing. And they're investing in higher education. They're recruiting our kids. They're recruiting our students. And they're bringing to their countries the human capital that we've invested so much in K through 12 schools. And hopefully we want them to stay here and build our economies, our local economies and state economies.
877-217-5757, Jim in Mandeville. Jim, good morning. You're on the air with President Alexander.
Good morning. Thanks for taking your time, President. So just if only 30% is being funded essentially through TOPS and the state, where's the other 70% coming from?
The other 70% is coming. The bulk is really coming from students and families on top of TOPS, so fees and room and board. And there's about another 10-20% from donations through our foundation, but also our research funding. And that's one thing LSU does more than anybody else is about $500 million of our funding comes through the Department of Education, Department of Defense, NIH, NSF. As a research institution, we've got to compete with Ohio State and UCLA to bring those funds to our state to solve the biggest problems, whether they're health, welfare, coastal environment, all these areas. So we get about $200 million from the state, but we get about $500 million through research-related activities specifically designed to solve the problems of our region and our state.
Johnny in Lafayette, you're on Talk Louisiana with President King Alexander.
President Alexander, would it not benefit Louisiana if we stopped giving free college educations to students who were C and D students in college, in high school, and now they face a more rigorous course of study in college?
Well, I think you're referencing probably the TOPS funding being at a 2.5. LSU students have to have a 3.0 to get into the institution. So roughly 15,000 of our 26,000 undergraduates are on TOPS, but they have to be 3.0s and above. And that's not just simply an ACT issue, but it's a grade point average issue. So We have this year opened our doors to holistic enrollment. We could have top students who are valedictorians who may have just taken one ACT, maybe at a 21 or 22, but their grade point average may be 3.8. So I think that it's something that I know the TOPS Commission looked at and others need to address. But as it stands, it's a 2.5 and above throughout the state, but it's a 3.0 at LSU.
Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on the air with President Alexander. Thank you, Johnny.
Yes, President Alexander, do your fellow flagship college presidents in other states face the same challenge as we have here, where a Republican-controlled legislature, as one of them admits, would rather see a Democratic governor fail than to promote the best interests of students?
That's a very good question. I would say the politics I've been in, three different states as a president, and I can tell you that the politics are different in every state. I wish they'd quit playing politics with higher education, and certainly our parents and students are worried about it through their TOPS, but our universities have been worried about it for a decade because we've been kicked around for a while, and until we get a stable budget, which was last year, we never fully could understand the value of what we could bring to the table. And now we're seeing it in the numbers that are coming at us right now. We just don't want to turn away and play politics till the end of June. We want to solve this problem so our parents and students know what they have before they make a decision to go to college.
877-217-5757 for King Alexander. And recently the university produced a comprehensive report on the economic impact of LSU to the local and state economy, and it is substantial.
The economic impact of the institution, we do this every 5 years, is worth $5.1 billion to the state. And just in the Baton Rouge area, that's almost $3 billion. Nearly 20,000 direct jobs and 41,000 indirect jobs, which are reliant on what the university does. The people don't understand that for every dollar that's invested in LSU, it brings $13 back to the state. And that's in research dollars, that's in productivity, that's in job growth, that's in economic growth. And if people fully would invest in what works, then we'd feel much better about the conversation that goes on down at the legislature each and every day.
David in Shenandoah. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with President Alexander.
Mr. Alexander, I just have a real simple question. How are the scholarships handed out and funded for, you know, the football and then maybe for research-type folks?
Okay, two areas. Athletic scholarships are our athletic budget is one of the about 13 in the United States that's fully funded by private generated revenues. So no state funds, no student funds go into our scholarships for athletics or anything else that we spend on athletic side of things. Research funds are generated, and they actually support primarily graduate students, but also undergraduate students in research-related activities. And that's from the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, the Department of Education, as I mentioned, Department of Defense and cybersecurity and other things. So a lot of the research funds go to help students in grad assistantships as well as undergraduate research-related activities.
Thank you, David. Before we go to the break, I mentioned you're about to celebrate your fifth-year anniversary. You've worked in some prominent places at other universities. Are you here for the long haul?
Oh, absolutely. This is like I said, there are two places in this country, public universities in this country. Everybody knows who we are, and UCLA and LSU. And everybody knows the value of LSU, and that we're just trying to build on that and get everybody to support it.
All right. We have some more time left with President King Alexander. Your number is 877-217-5757. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address, and we'll be back after this break for the news with Karen Henderson on WRKN. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is our producer, and your number is 877-217-5757. There is still time to get in with King Alexander, the president of LSU for almost 5 years, and chancellor. He has both jobs. The man from Louisville, Kentucky, who's had quite a life. He came here as president of California State University, Long Beach, and it's been quite a 5 years. Most of the attention has been about the budget, but of course there are other issues. And before we dispense with some of the numbers, earlier the president said that LSU's public funding has been cut from 75% to about 20%. 30% if you count TOP, so a significant decrease in the last 10 years. But the $5.1 billion for the economy, that can't be ignored, and LSU is a major engine of the economy. Is it taken for granted at times?
Oh, I think it is. I mean, when you're talking about 3% of the state's jobs are associated with LSU, we're in every parish through our Ag Center with 200,000 pre-college kids that are in our 4-H programs. Those are LSU programs. So the impact that we have on just the average family is not just in Baton Rouge or New Orleans or our Med Center, but is in every parish of the state through everything that we do in agriculture, in health and wellness, and in economic development.
877-217-5757. Jim in Baton Rouge on Jubin Lane. Hi, Jim. Good morning to you.
Hi, gentlemen. My grandparents both graduated from LSU. My mom and dad both graduated from LSU. My mom was the very first female honor student at LSU, and they instituted that program. I graduated from LSU, and I can't send my kid there. And it's depressing. And wanting to major in watching sports, going down a lazy river and learning to party. It's a great school, but the university has been decimated with budgetary issues.
All right. Does he have a point?
I'd actually say that you take a look at the 50 flagship universities around the United States. LSU's starting salaries ranked 21st, tied with Chapel Hill in Ohio State. What he's referencing are things he's reading about in the local newspaper, not in the reality of what our graduates are doing. And when you look at mid-career earnings, our graduates rank 18th of 50 flagships, above Chapel Hill and above Ohio State and most of the Big Ten. So our graduates are doing exceptionally well, and actually only 38% of our students graduate with any debt whatsoever. The national average is 82%. So the rate of return has never been stronger with an LSU degree. We just we wish the our local newspapers would write about the what happens to our graduates, which are among the best in the United States.
That, well, that's a big point, and it's probably not been played up as much as it should have, the 21st among the 50 top public universities as far as starting salary. And we live in an area where people generally don't earn as much as they do in California
exactly.
or New York.
That's a very good point.
But I've also seen reports that LSU graduates, and I'm one of them, we as a group contribute less to our university after we graduate than most other public universities.
So, Jim, that's a very good point, because we relied on the state so much for so long that now we're in a turn. We've turned this table around a little bit, and we were last in the SEC 2 years ago as a percentage of our alumni giving back. We ranked 14th of 14 SEC schools. Now we're tied for 7th. In terms of our alumni giving back. So people are starting to realize that the state isn't going to take care of everything we do. And we've had to work harder to get them to understand that and to get them to understand the value of an LSU degree.
Fontenot in Ville Platte. Hi, Fontenot. You're on with President Alexander.
Thank you, sir. Y'all got 14 of them four-year college. How come? And some of them college, they got a less than 10% graduation rate. How come y'all don't close them that ain't working?
All right. Some of them do have low graduation rates. What's the rate at LSU?
We're about 70% on graduation rate.
That's over how many years?
6 years. That's a 6-year graduation rate. So, and I'm very pleased that even our African American graduation rate is about 55%, which is about 20 points above the national average and well above many other universities' aggregate graduation rate. So we've never graduated more students with a higher percentage than we do right now, and we're looking to do much better each and every year.
What is the percentage now of minority students at LSU?
The percentage of minority, we're 16% of the freshman class, African-American, 15 to 16% coming in. Our Hispanic class is about 7%, and it's growing. Both of those areas are growing dramatically. And by that, I mean that our African-American application rate this year alone is up 80%. Our Hispanic admission rate and application rate's up 60%. So the campus is diversifying like the rest of the country is, in a nice way, in a way where we tell our students to come to campus and live, learn, and grow together.
You've spent much of the last several months dealing with issues regarding fraternity hazing, and we lost a young man who came here from Georgia, just arrived at LSU. Maxwell Groover died almost a year ago. What is your take about what's going on in that realm?
Yeah, I think the country has woken up to a national issue that particularly impacts the SEC, about half of the ACC schools, and the Big Ten. Where the bulk of most of our big Greek systems are. What never gets written in the newspaper is about all the good things that our Greek systems and our houses, fraternities and sororities do in our communities. The graduation rate is much higher than the average graduation rate, and the support structure they build on our campuses never really gets talked about. But I will say this issue of hazing is a serious issue that has got the attention of Michigan, Ohio State, and the entire SEC, of which best practices are now being discussed and adopted by many of our institutions. And a zero tolerance on hazing is exactly what we have to have. And this hazing issue is not necessary. It's proven to be detrimental to so many institutions around the United States, as well as housing systems and fraternity systems. So these best practices need to be adopted by our campuses throughout the SEC, throughout the Big Ten, and throughout the ACC, so that we actually are doing things in the safest way possible and promoting all the good things that actually come out of the Greek systems.
When you were at St. Lawrence University getting your bachelor's degree, were you a member of a fraternity?
I was not. I'll say that I kind of was, because I was on the basketball team and we had our own fraternity.
Yeah.
But I was not a member, but I have family members who were a daughter who's in the sorority, and My wife and others have been in Greek systems, but I wasn't because I was I had my own little fraternity, which is about 13 guys in the basketball team.
Does the Greek system have an inordinate impact at LSU?
The Greek system generally has an inordinate impact on the leadership of the student government on our campus. And over again, we've had student government presidents that come out of the Greek system. And so the leadership and the involvement of the Greek system on campus activities is disproportionate to generally for 20% of our campus that are Greeks. The leadership, you could probably say 50% of our campus leadership comes out of our Greek system.
And what does that do as far as how the university is run?
Well, we listen to our student leaders, and our student leaders, they come to us with issues that only students would know are problems that we can address, but we need that. We need the interaction with our student leaders. And disproportionately, it does involve many of our Greek leaders who roll into university-related leadership activities and help make campus safer, help make campus much better for students, all students, not just Greek students.
Now, when I drive down Highland Road, I no longer see Raphael Sims Road intersecting it. I see Veterans Drive. There have been some name changes, and that's one that, of course, had a legacy involving the Confederacy. Your thoughts about what went into the name changes as far as some of the streets at LSU?
Well, so we looked into some of the street names at LSU, and we couldn't necessarily find a rationale why some of the streets were named what they were. Raphael Sims had been on campus for 60 days, and we named a street after him. And more importantly, though, we actually opened a veteran center for students, over 500 of our students, right there on Raphael Sims Drive. And we thought it was better to celebrate all veterans. And we named it Veterans Drive because it's right in front of our Student Veterans Center that we received $1.3 million from Dr. Brookshire so we could set up a Veterans Center that a one-stop shop for all the students coming back from Afghanistan, Iraq, wherever they are around the world. They're coming back to LSU, and we want to make sure that they know that we're a veterans-friendly university.
Paul in Opelousas. Hi, Paul. You're on the air with President Alexander.
Hey, how are you doing, Jim? Hello, President. Just so you know, I don't know if you touched it on already. I know with all the student violence and incidents happening, what's LSU's future plans to better address the growing problem? You know, what's LSU's strategic plan in the next couple of years to address those problems?
I think that's a great question because in almost two decades of doing this, I've never seen students more uneasy with what's going on around them in the outside world. We've got DACA students worried. We international students are worried whether they should come to the United States. We have African-American students worried about what's going on outside the campus. I'm very pleased to say on campus, our students get along very, very well and work together very, very well. And I can't control what's going on in Washington, D.C., and the divisiveness of what's happening, or 300 people showing up with swastikas on their helmet in the middle of the University of Virginia campus with torches. Our students are worried about these things, but I will say our student leaders, they get along well, and we work with them closely to make sure that they have a safe place to get their voices out, to make sure that they, too, have a good environment to live together.
We're going to spend a few more minutes with President King Alexander after this brief timeout. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with King Alexander, the president of LSU. He'll be monitoring what goes on at the Capitol the next few months, the legislative session. I guess another one. This is the regular one starting today with Governor Edwards addressing lawmakers in a few hours. And King Alexander, as we went to the break, was talking about international students at LSU. I think about 7% of the student body is from other countries. And a lot of that has to do with the firepower of the engineering school at LSU, which brings people far and wide to the Old War School. How significant is it for these people from other countries to be comfortable here?
Well, I think that to globalize our university is our students are going to live in a global environment. And the beginning for many of them is right here on campus and to understand the global dynamics of what's going on. I remind people over and over again that a third of Silicon Valley was created by international students that came to the United States and stayed. and help build Silicon Valley, of which many of our universities and research parks are trying to emulate. There's great value in having international diversity. There's great value in having international dialogue throughout our university in our teaching, research, and service. And I can't emphasize that LSU's responsibility to our state is to help our state understand that and to bring the globe to Louisiana to make sure that we are an economic player, not just in Louisiana in the South region, but we're an economic player throughout the world.
How is the engineering school comparable to others?
Our engineering school is actually, with our new facility, which is the largest standing single engineering facility in the United States that we opened last year, we're now up to almost 1,200 graduates in computer science and engineering, up from about 750. We don't have any problem finding jobs for our engineering students and our computer science students, and it is a driving force, and actually it's one of the few areas in Washington that has complete nonpartisan support, both on the R side and the D side.
Well, thank you for your service to LSU, the man from Louisville. Fieldon King Alexander, who's been here 5 years, says he'll be here a lot more, and of course I know many in this audience have connections to LSU and our graduates, such as our producer, Allie Baltazar, and our host. So thank you,
King. Thank you, Alexander. Jim. Thanks for having
Always
me.
Always a pleasure. Yeah. Good luck. 877-217-5757 is your number. We're going to switch gears and talk with a gentleman, Jeffrey Mark, who is quite a man himself, a Grammy Award nominee, best-selling author, and his latest biographical target is the incomparable Ella Fitzgerald. She died in 1996, but the First Lady of Jazz remains quite vibrant in American and worldwide culture. And Allie, before we go to Jeffrey Mark, let's give a listen to some of the exceptional vocal talent that was embodied in Ella Fitzgerald.
I thought I'd found the man of my dreams. Now it seems this is how the story ends. He's going to turn me down and say, can't we be friends? I thought for once it couldn't go wrong. Not for long, I can see the way this ends. He's going to turn me down and say, can't we be friends?
Some incredible pipes from Ella Fitzgerald, and Jeffrey Mark has diligently put together the ultimate Ella biography. The tome not only covers her entire career with many never-before-seen photos, interviews, and anecdotes, but delivers for the first time the true untold story of Ella the woman. And good morning to you, Jeffrey Mark.
Good morning, sir.
It's nice to talk with you. Well, this lady's been gone about 22 years, but her music is timeless, isn't it?
It is, and it seems the more time goes by, the more people love what she's doing.
Why has she stayed the course? Others fade away, but even in a town like Baton Rouge, Louisiana, quite often when I go to the Manship Theater, there are tributes to Ella Fitzgerald.
Well, for one thing, I think Ella was the very best at what she did. I think it's why we're still talking about her. If you talk to musicians, if you talk to other singers in almost any area of music, you know, there's Ella Fitzgerald, and then there's everybody else. And there's a reason for that, because she loved what she did so much. She was so good at what she did, and she had a true love and respect for her audiences that I find very, very rare among performers. You put all of that together, and maybe also exquisite taste in the songs that she sang and the arrangements she used, and the musicians with whom she'd surrounded herself. And if you talk biographically about the work she did, opening up doors for other people, pushing down doors for other people so they could walk through as well, there's just so much to her there. And so many people love her music but don't know anything about the woman. And I'm really, really pleased to be able to bring that to our friends out there.
Well, Ella was the first woman to win two Grammy Awards in 1 year, first person to do so, and the woman with the largest catalog of CDs released in history. And she lived from 1917 to 1996. It was a full life, and Jeffrey, You note in the book, Ella, a biography of the legendary Ella Fitzgerald, that on the streets of Harlem, it wasn't a pretty sight for a young Ella Fitzgerald.
Not at all. She ran numbers. She was a lookout for prostitutes. That's how she lived, literally, to put a roof over her head. She was not a sex worker herself, but she was this young teenage girl who looked out for the cops. Oh, hurry up, get dressed, they're coming. She was, as somebody once called her, a good girl living a bad life.
And you say she survived sexual and physical abuse.
Yes, sir, unfortunately. Her mother died when she was about 14, and she never knew her real father. The man she called her stepfather, neither of these men were actually married to her mother. He was Portuguese. It was a mixed racial marriage at a time when that hardly ever happened. And unfortunately, when her mother died, her stepfather mentally, physically, and sexually abused her. And Ella ran away, first to an aunt, didn't like it there, and ran away again, and was caught. And because she was a girl and not a boy, and because she was African-American and not white, she was sent to a reformatory for girls. I don't know if your friends out there have read Charles Dickens' novels about awful places children are brought up in, but this place was worse than that. Substandard housing, and even worse for the ones who were African-American. In their own paperwork, they say she was regularly taken to the basement and literally tortured.
Mm.
She runs away again to the streets of Harlem, and yet somehow she finds it within herself, some storehouse of courage, some storehouse of faith perhaps, because she was a woman of faith, to say, all right, this has all happened to me, but I'm going to take my God-given talents and do something with my life. And at first she wanted to be a dancer. She called herself Snake Hips Fitzgerald, and wanted to be a hep dancer in the 1930s, and had gone, put her name into an amateur hour in Harlem, and was waiting to go on to dance. But the last act on the bill was this black sister act called the Edwards Sisters, and she said they were the dancingest sisters who ever lived, a flash act of just one number and one step after another, and they get this huge applause, and now here's little Ella Fitzgerald, and she was 16 years old. She said, I can't follow those girls going out there, and the ladies of the evening had gone with her and literally pushed her out on the stage, and Ella got hit with a spotlight for the very first time, and we'll never know whether the spotlight loved Ella more or Ella loved the spotlight more. But she shyly walked over to the MC, and he says, honey, you got to do something. Can you sing? And she said, I'm so nervous. The only song I can remember is Connie Boswell's song, Judy. He said, we have the arrangement. Relax. She sang, she won, and she won every contest she entered. That's remarkable. That's remarkable for a 15-year-old girl.
Well, this book goes places others have not in their portrayal of Ella Fitzgerald. She gave a lot of money, for example, to Dr. Martin Luther King. She was internationally famous, performing in all the venues across the globe and rubbed shoulders with people of all kinds, but the top lights in show business as well. As we part company for this hour, Jeffrey, what about Frank Sinatra and Ella? They were close.
They were close. There was a mutual admiration society there. Frank had her on almost every TV show and special, but he did. They desperately wanted to sing an album together, but Mr. Sinatra and Miss Fitzgerald's manager, Norman Granz, hated one another, and that interfered both with them being able to record and with my book, because I went to Mr. Sinatra to ask, you know, tell me about working with Ella, and he called Norman Granz's office to say, is this guy real? And they eliminated me out of their lives, and I got a phone call. Please hang on, I have Frank Sinatra for you. And I don't remember what I could have said. He apologized to me and sent me some autographed pictures. And as it turned out, because at that moment in time, it wasn't an authorized biography.
Well, the book is Ella, a biography of the legendary Ella Fitzgerald from Jeffrey Mark. Thank you, Jeffrey. And thanks for joining us. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.